Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. I'm Jonathan Egerich, joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich, and we're so glad that you could be with us this week as we do part two of a two-part series on parenting titled, When Parenting, the Punishment Must Fit the Crime. And if you haven't heard the first episode, that was episode 52 of the podcast, so you can go back and check that out. But my dad was covering 4 points on a blog and some other writings that he did related to, you know, kind of discipline within parenting. And we covered the first 2 points or the first 2 quadrants, as he'll explain here in a second. But why don't you give Dad kind of just the brief review of what you went over in part one, and then we'll transition into part two today.
Well, we indicated that in the courts, they have 3 levels. They call it infractions, misdemeanors, and felonies. And we all kind of have, I think, a basic familiarity with that. And within each of those categories, they have the crime that must, you know, be defined in such a way that when they inflict some kind of punishment, that there's kind of as they say, the punishment must fit the crime. And as we pointed out, if a person, you know, an infraction would be a parking violation, for instance, you don't send the person to the electric chair, you know, or if a person, you know, rapes and murders somebody, you don't slap them on the hand with $1,000 fine and let them go free. I mean, we know those extreme illustrations don't happen, but there is a great effort in the courts to make sure that they define it. Was this an infraction? Was this a misdemeanor? Was this a felony? But then within each of those 3 categories, it now has to be determined intent. What was the motive? And we looked at that as well, because you can quote run over somebody, which is a felony, killing somebody, but there's a difference between murder and manslaughter. Manslaughter is, you know, the pedestrian came running out, the driver couldn't stop, couldn't swerve, I mean, and you killed the person, but there's no crime here because there was no intent. That's different than the person sitting in the car, taking out a shotgun, and killing the person because they walked on, you know, the driveway. So I think we see through these illustrations, but it's important that we think about that infraction, misdemeanor, and felony, and then within each of those, the intent behind that. Because we then said, in raising our children, there are 2 major categories, social rules and moral law. And the social rules would be etiquette. And the deal is our children are going to violate etiquette and they are going to be annoying, but they aren't doing something wicked and evil, okay? And then within that category is intent. They do things unintentionally, which we said, you know, unintentionally annoying behavior. They're just being thoughtless. They're just not thinking. We put that under a quadrant. And we said the first, you know, square is thoughtlessness, unintentional annoying behavior. But then we said there's an intentional annoying behavior, and we classified that as rudeness. But again, and it's not right in a sense, but it's not that they've created some transgression here that's worthy of eternal damnation. You know, they just are not being mature enough. You know, the little boy says something, smarts off to his mother in a rude way. It was intentional because he's feeling sorry for himself and he wants to hurt her feelings. But he's you know, I think we all understood that. But now we're saying in this podcast, well, what about these other 2 categories? Where you now deal with the moral law, where there's intentional badness, I mean, and there's unintentional badness. Mm-hmm. And we'll begin with unintentional badness. And badness here is whatever the behavior, whatever took place is intrinsically not good. This isn't just a relative thing. This is not intrinsically good. This, we could say, is inherently bad. And we'll talk about that in this podcast. And how do you make sure that the punishment fits the crime when our children are unintentionally bad or intentionally bad.
Well, explain again, as you did in that in episode 52, though, just why, you know, you kind of have to come in and out of this word of punishment, but how you don't like it necessarily for parenting.
No, thank you for that reminder that I use the word correction. Punishment fits a crime is a metaphor that we've used, and we've all heard that. But really, when we deal with our children, we're not trying to punish them for what they did wrong. You know, you're bad, therefore I'm going to punish you. You're going to pay for what you did. That's punitive. And I don't see child discipline that way. I see it as corrective. They've gotten off the rail, and discipline is helping them get back on the rail. It's very proactive, and it's positive. So, yes, thank you, John, for that reminder. And I said last time, work with me on this. When we talk about punishment with fifth crime, I'm using that metaphorically. We're not going to try to point a finger at them with an evil look in our face and say, you're gonna suffer for what you've done wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you change or not. I'm gonna make you pay. No, that is not the mindset. It's a metaphorical expression.
Sure. So, punishment. I mean, in the same way, right, that we're talking about seeing our child's intent, right? I mean, here our intent, as always, right? I mean, these are often broad-based principles that can't apply to every situation, and there's imperfect language to try to describe things, right?
That's correct.
We're trying to create, you know, word pictures, right? But the idea is that parenting should not be punishment or punitive. It should be corrective.
That's right. And it's just basically these four categories, and I think it's helpful. As parents, when these things happen, we have to ask ourselves, is this just improper etiquette here? It's not acceptable to me. But it's not a moral issue. It's not an illegal issue. It's just an etiquette issue, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you say, you know, this is just a social rule that they're violating, and then I have to ask myself, did they intend to do this or did they not intend to do this? And try to determine that, because some of us are taking up offense in response to children who are innocent. They're just immature, but yet what they did is not acceptable. But we don't need to overreact to this as though they intended to offend us. And we're reacting as though they've committed some serious, serious immoral, you know, action. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there are parents out there who are letting their kids off the hook, who are intentionally doing immoral things, and they're turning a blind eye to it. And on the other side, you can fall off a horse either way. You start to go off on the right side, and you overreact, and you end up falling off on the other side. And we want to make sure that we're balanced here, that we're not saying, hey, in order for you to be the mature one, you got to be more accommodating. Yes, that's one of the messages, but some of you are too accommodating. You're permissive and you're passive, and parenting demands courage. And I have to just say, some of you are cowards because you're more phlegmatic in your personality, both husband and wife, and you've got this strong-willed, choleric child, and he's going to change the world. But right now, you've got to make sure you're in charge and making sure that you're not just letting him go and do whatever he wants. You know, it's the proverbial idea of the kid on the tricycle riding into a busy street. You know, you don't let that happen because that is going to lead to the death of your child. And he thinks he's right, and he's determined, but you don't. You grab that tricycle, and if you have to, you drag him out of the street quickly before the semi runs over him. And it's that image that I want us to keep in mind. And some of us, on some levels, are way too accommodating because we're running a popularity contest, particularly as the kids get older, and maybe we feel guilty about not being there, and so we're just giving in to them. No, you're not here to be popular. You're here to do what's right for the child. And later on, if you give in all the time, they're not going to honor you or respect you. They're going to read the handwriting on the wall very quickly. You stay the course, and one day they'll sing your praises. Even if you're now divorced and your other spouse is trying to win them and you're feeling like you're in this competition, don't you compromise. You be this loving, respectful person. You speak truth, and you just do what's right, and they'll come around at some point and thank you for that. Right now you're losing, quote, to the other spouse out there. I get it. But don't you become this person who's running some kind of a popularity contest and hope that your kids are going to vote for you over your ex.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, so episode 52, if you didn't get the chance to listen to it, unpacks more the unintentional annoyances and the intentional annoyances. And now we're going to transition to kind of the final two quadrants of this quadrant that you laid out. Let's do that.
Yep. This is the unintentionally bad child. In other words, they're morally reckless. I mean, it is a moral issue, but they're reckless. They're not rebelling, which we're going to see in our last category, but they are reckless. Jonathan, read about a 9-year-old boy.
A 9-year-old boy is swinging a baseball bat in his bedroom while his younger brother is running in and out of the bedroom. Danger is written all over this picture. One whack of the bat across the side of the head of the little boy, and he could have a concussion, if not instantaneous death. Maiming or killing his little brother is innately bad. This is not a gray area. This is not about social etiquette. This is about life and death. This is a matter of doing what is clearly the right thing to do. Do not swing the bat with the brother around. Injuring his brother is clearly wrong, and the older brother has a moral duty to act morally responsible. However, a 9-year-old boy can be reckless, and I'll let you kind of respond to some of that.
Yeah. Though he intends no harm, we all would agree he can bring serious impairment. And a parent must act immediately to prevent an unintentional tragedy. I mean, we can see it, right? I mean, we all have had those moments. Any of us who have boys who like baseball, they're going to swing that bat imprudently. But since this, let's say in this case, is the first time the 9-year-old has swung the bat in the home, he just got it, he's in the bedroom, a parent need not yell and scream, but coach him on what is safe and what is unsafe. This is not a minor infraction, because it could be manslaughter, as we're pointing out. At the same time, one need not punish the boy since he is not intending harm. A parent can act on 1 Peter 4:8, which says, above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. And again, our call as parents is to be loving as we deal with this. Yes, this is serious, but we don't need to go off on him as though somehow he's criminal. He's not. He's just a 9-year-old boy who loves his bat and isn't thinking. He's reckless. He's not thoughtless necessarily, but he can be reckless. I mean, in a sense, it is thoughtlessness, but this is serious thoughtlessness, which we would classify as reckless. A parent can move on after one-time coaching. No need to jump down his throat with anger and threats. The punishment must fit the crime. Reckless does not mean rebellious. Mm-hmm. But read about a 16-year-old.
A 16-year-old driver, in a hurry to get to school since he overslept, jumps in the car, backs out of the driveway quickly, and puts the pedal to the metal as he peels off down the street. As the mother watches, she sees a small child crossing the road up the street. In semi-shock, screaming in fear, she observes her son slam on his brakes and skid to a stop as the child keeps moving to the other side. Though the teen had no intention of running over a child, his reckless driving was legally and morally wrong. He did not do what he did deliberately or with malice. Even so, he crossed a line that needs punishment that fits the crime. A parent may take his license for a painful period of time and have the teen do some project that serves the neighborhood to prevent his reputation from going in the toilet. So those might be some examples of how the mother or the parents might respond in that instance.
That's right. That's right. Hey, remember, as an inexperienced young man who makes some assumptions about safety that are too simplistic, and we all did when we got behind that wheel at age 16, and as we've said, sophomore is a compound word, Sophia, wisdom, more a moron. And he comes in and out of wisdom and moronish, idiotic, stupid behavior. And that's why the word sophomore was created, because we recognize a 16-year-old in particular is both mature and immature, but they can be reckless. And this is why we all fear giving the keys to a 16-year-old, because we understand they can be extremely mature, but they can also be lethal. And so again, though, what was the intent? Here you see very clearly that he's naive, and if you know his heart as good-willed, he will learn from this. As Proverbs 8:5 states, O naive ones, which he was, understand prudence, and O fools, which he was, understand wisdom. In other words, the appeal is this person can grow. They can become the wiser on the heels of their naivety, and this can then, with your son in this instance, be a teaching moment. But again, the key for you as a parent is to understand intent. He did not intend. Doesn't mean, though, that this is less serious. This is very serious. But again, you can coach him based on his intent. And you can say, I know you didn't intend to do that. I know you were in a hurry. You were conscientious about getting this X, Y, Z or whatever. But again, this is a very serious moment, and a parent can discipline accordingly.
Well, I gave the example in the first part of this as well, right? I mean, the two, you know, adolescent boys lighting off fireworks on the afternoon of July 4th, right? And a barn goes up in flames, and they ruin the neighbor's barn and destroy it, and there's property damage, right? And so,
That's right.
I think in some of these instances too, as you gave the examples of, you know, kind of our criminal system as well, I mean, these are teaching moments for a parent, but we're also teaching our kids that there are going to be natural and societal consequences to what they do, and we're trying to prevent as much of that as possible, right?
That's
through
right.
Through these examples that you gave where actually nothing bad ended up happening, but we saw the potential for something happening, whether the bat being swung or whether speeding down the road, right? But we've also got these examples where our kids do reckless things that do end up doing significant damage not only to themselves, but to others or to property, and there's a variety of consequences that are going to come out of that.
That's right. Well, I think of Keith Granger, a good friend of ours, who when he was a boy had some explosive device and he blew off one of his fingers, and he's now going through life without one of his fingers. And there are consequences, natural consequences, logical consequences. So again, some of the illustrations we give is kind of like you go, whew, the child running across the street didn't get hit, but sometimes a child running across the street does get hit. Mm-hmm. And there are going to be legal consequences to this. That's why community service, or in some cases, you know, recklessness can in fact be established as, you know what, we're going to send a message through to the larger society through you that we're not going to tolerate this. You could have thought better than you thought. Yes, you didn't do this with malice. There was no deliberation. There was no premeditation. But we're going to punish you mm-hmm. by the following. And so the courts will make that decision.
Sure.
So to parents, because this, now we're in a very serious category. As we talked about, Stephen Curtis Chapman's son, 16-year-old boy, backed over their younger daughter that they had adopted, and she was killed. And so this is not intent. There was no intent. He wasn't sent to prison. I mean, the punishment here is the personal guilt that he has to live with all of his life, and the struggle with, can he forgive himself for doing something? But he moved into the moral category. That child's not coming back to life. This is why we say this is innately good or innately bad. But the intent here doesn't make him a criminal. But nonetheless, this is serious stuff. Mm-hmm. And particularly when a child does something of a reckless nature and the child doesn't die, for instance, the punishment, you know what, we're taking your license from you for 6 months. This is unacceptable recklessness. Mm-hmm. You know, we know you didn't intend to do it. We're not going to argue with him then, but we're going to send you a strong message that you'd better think when you get in that car.
Sure.
That kind of idea.
Well, and that goes back to this idea of, as we've talked about with the permissive parenting, right? I mean, there can be those parents that lean towards, well, he or she's not meaning to do anything, right? They're not trying to harm it, right? I mean, this is that idea. And yet corrective action is still needed apart from intent in
That's
this
right.
instance, there, right?
That's right. Well, I think all of us recognize we have been reckless in our lives. And how did you stop being reckless? Because you realize, you know what, I better think before I get behind this car. Mm-hmm. And so, to your point, we are not saying that because they were unintentionally reckless, unintentionally doing something bad, that you remove all consequences from them. You may need to be very severe. And if you are the passive parent, whereas your child is a strong-willed, you know, hellion, you're going to have to be brave here. You can't just let them talk themselves out of, well, I won't do it again. Hey, I don't care if you're going to do I do care if you're going to do it again. That's exactly right. You're not going to do it again. And to reinforce that, we're taking your license for 3 months. Well, I won't do it again. You can't do that to me. Hey, parent, remain firm on this. Remain firm on this. If you give in, because you're this passive person, you are not doing your child any favor. They are not going to learn their lesson. They're just convincing you that they're going to learn their lesson. What they're going to do when they're behind your back is talk to their buddy, my parents are stupid. I can talk them out of anything. If you don't think that conversation's going on, you trust me. I went to military school for 5 years, from 8th grade to 12th grade, and there were 350 cadets there, and half of them were street smart. And if you don't think that that kind of conversation is going on, you got to be out of your mind. Children are moral, spiritual beings, and they're far more rebellious sometimes than we think. And you mustn't let them do that whining thing with you. They're just good actors. Remain firm. It doesn't mean you're mean-spirited, doesn't mean you're contemptuous, doesn't mean you're hateful. It means you're going to implement consequences. You can remain cool, calm, and collected. You don't have to scream. You just simply say, here are the consequences. Here's what we're going to do. And if they rebel against it, like I did with my mom, then go to the police. My mom went to the police. And I tell that story how I see the cop car coming down the road, and I about wet my pants. But that was the best thing that mom could have done for me. And that's why we have authority figures. But that's an extreme situation. But nonetheless, I learned a very good lesson at that point in time, because I knew I was in charge of my mom. I knew I could lock her out of the house and my sister. I knew I could be in charge, and she wasn't going to compete with me. She turned around, walked off, got in the car. Next thing I know, a policeman's showing up. But that's a story for another time.
So unintentionally bad or morally reckless. Mm-hmm. Now the final
That's right.
Final category.
Intentionally bad. In other words, they are morally rebellious. They're consciously and willfully doing this. Read about a 10-year-old boy.
A 10-year-old boy had been playing a video game without permission. He had specifically been told by his father not to play with his brother's new video game. Not wanting to obey his dad, he went ahead and played with the new video device. His dad catches him and tells him he needs to be disciplined for his disobedience. The consequence would be no playing outside this afternoon. Instead, he would spend an hour helping dad clean out the garage. Feeling provoked by this discipline, he retaliates against his dad and throws his brother's video game up against the wall in a fit of rage and smashes it. What the boy does is beyond being socially thoughtless and rude, and beyond being morally reckless. Consciously and willfully, he has rebelled against his dad. This is open defiance. What he does is innately bad.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So now this is not putting a gun to somebody's head and killing them, moral thing, but you can see this is the beginning. That if you allow that kind of behavior to continue, then it's going to lead to even more serious problems later on. And so technically, you know, we could say, well, manslaughter is worse than this act of destroying a video game. Yes, but work with me. I'm trying to create a framework here to point that out. And yeah, this is a lesser, crime, so to speak, than running over a child and killing the child unintentionally. I get that. But you see the categories you're trying to establish because you can see, 10 years from now, it gets even worse. Now he's going to smash dad's face through a window, And so I think, work with me. I could have used more extreme illustrations, but I want to keep it within the realm of some of our experiences. So here you see, whatever the dad does, though, the punishment must fit the crime. In this instance, he must not under-discipline his son. To let this son win is comparable to a judge telling a person selling cocaine that their sentence is reduced to a parking ticket fine. Instead of sending the drug dealer to prison, the judge acts like a meter maid. Whatever the discipline a father metes out, though, he must make sure his decision is based on what is best for his son. If the father fears the son, lacking the courage to confront, to correct, and enact consequences, which I do address in the book Love and Respect in the Family, I talk about how to do that, then this father is a mere meter maid. A dad must hear the scripture, Hebrews 12:7, for what son is there whom his father does not discipline? So if you love your child, you will discipline them. Hebrews is making the point, if you don't discipline them, you don't love them, and you basically consider them orphans. But let's go a little bit more severe with Jason, an 18-year-old.
Jason, an 18-year-old, plays tennis at the country club in a tournament with another senior, Michael. Both have had a rivalry for a couple years academically and athletically. They are not friends, especially since Michael took Jason's girlfriend. As the tennis match escalates, both make derogatory comments to the other. Things heat up to the point that both make threats to bust the other in the mouth if the other doesn't shut his mouth. Rushing the ball at the net, they meet face to face as the play ends. Staring each other down, Michael smarts off, and Jason breaks his tennis racket over Michael's head, leaving a deep cut from which blood pours out. Others rush in to separate the two who are about to brawl. Michael curses Jason, who returns a few choice words. Both are ushered out.
Yes, and this kind of situation arises not as often to which we're grateful, but it does happen. And this is the kind of violence that we see in our culture. And the question is, okay, now what is the response? Well, at home, Jason's parents tell him, and rightly so, there's just no excuse for this. As bad as Michael is, two wrongs don't make a right. His loss of self-control, his violent action toward Michael, and his damaged reputation demand serious consequences. In this case, Michael, could actually, Jonathan, press legal charges for assault and battery, which still remains to be seen whether he's going to do that. We don't know. I'm not going to take the story down that direction, but that could happen. Everyone watching them also knows that Jason was flat out wrong for his explosive and brutal reaction. So Dad says to Jason, truth is, you thumbed your nose at the club members who do not tolerate playing the game of tennis this way, and you declared that might makes right. That's not honorable. It's not just. It doesn't make it right. I'm calling the tennis club, and hear me, son, and I'm going to recommend that charges be brought against you. And why am I doing this? Because you need to know something. My dad did that toward me when I had marijuana in my possession. I was in disbelief. Yes, he called the cops, but that was the wake-up call I needed. And you need a serious wake-up call on this one. As they say in the military, this is conduct unbecoming. At the same time, I'm actually excited for you. You can see firsthand that might does not make right. If you intend to beat Michael, Beating him over the head is not the strategy. There's a foundational biblical principle here, and I want to say this to you parents, and this is what you see this dad doing. For he who does wrong will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. Colossians 3:25. And that's how you need to operate, parents. Let me read that again. For he who does wrong, your child, will receive the consequences of the wrong which he has done, and that without partiality. Don't you be partial here. Don't give in. This is serious stuff. Be tough. Love must be tough, as we say. So, Jonathan, in conclusion, I cannot tell the parents out there, you know, what punishment should fit the crime in their particular case. I can't do that because there are too many circumstances, and I don't know your specific frame of reference. What I can urge are two major thoughts. First, do not punish beyond the crime, and do not punish below the crime. The punishment must fit the crime. Secondly, determine intent. Did my child do this intentionally or unintentionally? If intentionally, never punish as though the child did not intend to do this. And if unintentionally, never punish as though the child intended to do this. Mm-hmm. And we need to learn these two things from our courts.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe you unpack this, but as we kind of wrap up, you know, part two of this two-part series, and we've talked about the unintentional and the intentional, I guess one of the thoughts comes to my mind, and maybe you go into this in the book, and that's a good resource for people to move towards. But, you know, even the court system, right, I think has challenges at times, and there's probably a method and a legal way of doing this, of establishing intent, right? And so I think some of these examples you gave are fairly recognizable in terms of the obvious. This was unintentional and this is intentional. But I think that one of the challenges of parenting, right, is, and maybe this is being consistent with your child, maybe this is the over the long haul, the marathon of parenting, that you begin to learn the spirit of your child and to sense when there is intent or not intent. But I think there's some pretty gray areas at times, right? Is this immaturity? Is this willfulness? If this irresponsible? Is this, you know, with malice? And maybe we can't unpack that. But I do think that there is more to probably be said on this idea of how do we gauge our child's intent? And how do we, this example of even the father with tennis, I mean, that was, you know, it was obvious, right? But how do we sit down with our children and move towards their heart, right? What were you thinking when you did this, right? What were you imagining would happen, right? And, you know, that type of thing. I mean, do you have anything to say on that? Or can you point people to some other things that you've written or even something in the book? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
No, I think those are all excellent observations. And I think that's what those who are listening are probably asking. How do I really know about this intent? And I think, again, it is the pattern, you know. I mean, the one time in the theater where the little boy stands up, you know, yells, there's Johnny on stage. I mean, he's not intending to do anything. We know that. But it can get more complex later on. So I think one of the answers to your question is, what's the pattern here? I mean, does this child continue to do reckless things and continue to say, I didn't intend to? Well, after a while, you know, the I didn't intend to evidences that they are doing this willfully. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pattern. It's not the punctiliar, but it's the habitual. It's not the one point in time, but, you know, over time. And each of us has to kind of discern that. That's why Hebrews says, yes, our earthly parents discipline according to what seemed best. And we talked about seemed best, and that's a subjective element. I love that verse because there's no objective formula here that you can plug it in today. Here's exactly what you need to do. In this instance, it doesn't work that way. It do what seemed best. It's subjective. There's a judgment call we have to make, and we don't always know if we're 100% accurate. And so this idea of determining intent, sometimes, you know, kids can fool us. But sometimes we can fool ourselves. We can think that they intended to do something when they didn't, and we can conclude they didn't intend it when they did. And I don't have, as I said, a formula here, but I think it is crucial that every parent think in terms of this quadrant. And if you do, you do a better job of it. I think those who are overreactionary type parents, who are the cleric like I would have been or my dad would have been, we need to hear, hey, our kids probably are just being childish. Those of you who are passive and have strong-willed children, you can probably conclude that they're doing things a little bit more intentionally than perhaps you want to admit to yourself mm-hmm. or confront them on.
Well, that's good. I appreciate you saying that. And as with part one, you asked a series of questions at the end, and I think we've got kind of four questions for people to consider here on these final two categories.
Yes. The first question on this moral category, the bad area, so to speak, unintentional or intentional bad behavior on your child's part, which we have said is either reckless or rebellious behavior. First, do you tend to over or underreact when your children are being morally reckless? It's a good question. You know they're reckless, but how do you react to that? They're not being rebellious. But now the second question, how do you handle moral rebellion? I mean, do they put you in your place? I mean, here's the deal. Somebody's going to be in charge in your family. Someone is going to create the rules and make sure the rules are implemented. And either your child's going to establish those rules and you're going to abide by them, or you're going to establish the rules and your children are going to abide by them. You can't be neutral on this, folks. This is why I say to the passive, permissive parent, you think you're winning that child's heart. They're just going to run over you. Doesn't mean you get angry at them, resent them for their mistreatment of you. No, you're the adult. They're not. Parenting is for adults only. But, how are you going to handle when these moral, rebellious moments take place? And they will. Your child's not perfect, and they're in rebellion against you and against God. I mean, all of us have sinned and fall short of God's glory. Romans 3:23. It's going to happen. Because they need to know they need the Savior. They need to know they need forgiveness. And so there has to be this, this is where it's theologically difficult. They're going to have to sin in order to understand the need for forgiveness of sin. We don't endorse sin because of that. We just simply say this is the way it is. We're not prescribing it. We're describing it. Thirdly, when handling your child's moral rebellion, do you make decisions that are best for the child, or do you lack the courage to confront and correct them? This is to that passive parent. And fourthly, do you make sure to take intent into consideration in these circumstances as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope those questions were meaningful as they summarized in many ways what we just talked about. But again, this was two parts on four areas, and I hope this was meaningful to parents and those who are hoping to be parents, but even grandparents as you look at your grandchildren as well. So any final thoughts or comments, Dad?
Yeah, let me just pray for that person who's listening, because we want to be perfect parents, and we're not, and we feel disappointed. The nature of this discussion is helping us assess our parenting, and if you're like me, you evaluated yourself not on your successes but on your inadequacies. And let's just ask God to help us with this. Lord, you know our hearts as parents. We love our children. We would die for them. And yet we're challenged as parents. In some ways, we feel like we're parenting in our spare time because of all the pressures and responsibilities on us. And they act like ping pong balls in a bathtub at times. We don't need them to bounce in that direction at this point. We've got things to do, and we get irritated. And then So, Lord, you know the dynamics. And we just pray that you give us wisdom to know if this is just a social etiquette issue that they unintentionally did, or they're intentionally being rude, but, it's other issues going on. Maybe they are doing something that's immoral, but they didn't intend to, and this is a teaching moment for them in the heels of their recklessness. But some of us have this openly defiant child, and they are consciously, willfully defying what we know is legal, what is moral. And I pray for that parent that they would not turn passive, but to remain firm. And this is tough. It's tough. But would you give them the strength to do what you call them to do? And we just pray that they'd be given that strength now. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Take care. Have a great week.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect Podcast. For more information and additional products, go to loveandrespect.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.